Hare Krishna. We are continuing with the glorification of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The anniversary, the 100th anniversary of whose disappearance day was yesterday. I also read an email that this event appeared on the front page of Wikipedia, which is a good sign, which means that the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur are getting known to the modern world in a way that is very encouraging for all his followers. So to briefly recapitulate what we discussed yesterday, we spoke about the need for hearing about and speaking about the lives and teachings of our great acharyas, and how it was so important for us to appreciate the value of our devotional heritage that includes very principally the lives and teachings of our acharyas like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We discussed a historical perspective. We discussed this from a historical perspective with specific regard to our sampradaya, the Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya, and saw how it was a combination of diksha and shiksha. In Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's case, we see that Srila Prabhupada mentions his line. In the line of that he mentions in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, he mentions Bhaktivinoda Thakur's name after Jagannath, Das Babaji, and also Baladev. But there is no direct diksha connection between them. There is only a shiksha connection. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's diksha guru was Bipin Bihari Goswami. And after Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we find Gaur Kishore Das Babaji's name, although Gaur Kishore Das Babaji didn't actually take diksha from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was actually a grand diksha disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. But Gaur Kishore Das Babaji used to appreciate very much the teachings and the personality of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So there is a shiksha connection between him and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Even though Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own son, Bimala Prasad, who later on went on to be known as a celebrated Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was his own son, was a very exalted devotee, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not offer him diksha or initiation. He sent him to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji for that. And eventually, after a great struggle, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was able to be successful, and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji actually initiated him. What could be the reason for Bhaktivinoda Thakur doing that? He was certainly a Paramahamsa Vaishnava. We saw yesterday that he's actually an eternal associate of the Lord. He's Kamala Manjari in the eternal Leela in Goloka Vrindavan. He's by no means an ordinary personality. But because one of the principal reasons for the advent of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was to refute the false claims and ideologies of the deviant sects known as the upper sampradayas, and to once again clearly establish the pristine teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did not want in any way for people to think at that time or later on in posterity that he perpetuated a seminal succession. Of the 13 upper sampradayas or deviant sects, one of them was called Jata Gosai. Until today, we find prominent remnants of this sect. Essentially, what the people of this sect consider is that it is only through seminal succession, that means through heredity, that one becomes a guru, a Vaishnava guru. So one has to be born in that particular Brahmin family, and one's father must have been a Vaishnava Acharya, then alone can one be qualified to be one. If one is born outside of such a family, then one cannot become a Vaishnava guru. So at that point in time, this was a very, very prominent thing. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually fighting tooth and nail against such false claims. Therefore, if he initiated his own son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, who was at that time Bimala Prasad, even though it was an ideal combination of a guru and disciple, both were eminently qualified to be the guru and the disciple, nevertheless, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur avoided this, lest it be considered another example of initiation due to seminal succession or heredity. So in order to avoid such a conception or an allegation or even a thought in anybody's mind, he refrained from giving diksha or initiation to his own son. And of course, he also wanted to glorify Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who was basically a recluse. He was a bhajanandi who would very, very exalted, and he would be by himself chanting the holy names all the time. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur eventually accepted him as his initiating guru. So the connection, the sampradaya goes on like that, and then of course Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple, Srila Prabhupada, started ISKCON, and now we see such a worldwide preaching mission that has come about, that is ever expanding now. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is actually considered the root of the preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the modern era. As we discussed yesterday, there were four dark ages in the period of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur came at the end of that fourth episode, that period of darkness. When Sri Baladev Vidya Bhushan Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur had disappeared from this world, and all these upper sampradayas were gaining ascendancy and becoming very prominent and popular, and because of which the Gaudiya Vaishnavas were being they were coming into disrepute. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first prominent preacher, was the first scholarly person who established in writing through many, many books the teachings, the correct teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let's have a little quiz. Let's see how many names of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works that you can come up with. Just a few. Anyone? Yes. Jaiva Dharma, of course, that's his magnum opus, a classic text written in novel format. Of course, in Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, that wasn't something unique. It's often been done even before him. For example, Srila Sanatan Goswami wrote his famous Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is somewhat similar. A novel format, a story unfolds, but through that story, many, many important, deep, esoteric lessons are taught. So the Jaiva Dharma undoubtedly is one of the greatest works of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a classic in which all the essential principles of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are found. Anything else? Sorry? Bhaktialoka. Excellent. Yes. What else? Harinam Chintamani. Very nice. Sorry? Chaitanya Shikshamrita, excellent. What else? Sorry? Dashamula Tattva, okay, very nice. We have lots of scholars here. What else? Sharana. Okay, that's the songs. We'll come to the songs a little later. Just the books. Yeah, Sri Chaitanya, his life and precepts, the one that he sent out to McGill University in the year of Srila Prabhupada's appearance in this world, 1896. Yes, Tattva Vidh Prabhu. Excellent, yes. The Bhagavat, its philosophy, ethics and theology. Yes. Bhajana Rahasya, excellent, very good. Anything else? Okay, what about the commentaries that he wrote? He wrote commentaries on several scriptures and books. Any idea? Sorry? Shikshashtakam, excellent. What is his commentary on the Shikshashtakam called? Sammodhana Bhashya. So it's a classic commentary on the Shikshashtakam. Actually, if you want to understand the Shikshashtakam prayers, we have to read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sammodhana Bhashya. We read Shikshashtakam practically every day, but it's so deep and so wonderful. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't write anything or compose anything that is recorded or known today except these 8 verses. He left it for his disciples to do the needful. He instructed the 6 Goswamis to write profusely and establish the devotional conclusions in the scriptures, which they did admirably. And his other followers, the successor acharyas, also did that. But Mahaprabhu left behind only these 8 verses, the Shikshashtakam. And Kaviraj Goswami has offered brief comments on them in the very last chapter, the 20th chapter of the Antya Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But it is Bhaktivinoda Thakur who gave an exquisite commentary on the Shikshashtakam. It's a Sammodhana Bhashya. Then any other commentaries? What about the Chaitanya Charitamrita itself? What is his commentary called? Prabhupada quotes it every now and then, mentions it in his commentaries, purports. Amrita Pravaha Bhashya. And then he also wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, which also included a translation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is called the Sararatha Varshini. The Sararatha Darshini is his 10th canto commentary, but the Bhagavad Gita commentary is Sararatha Varshini. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote his commentary along with that, and he translated it, and that was called the Rasika Ranjan. So these were the commentaries. What about the songs? He wrote many collections of songs. We read one just now. What is that book? Sharanagati. Then what else? Yeah, that's a specific song. But I'm saying the collection of songs, the books. Geetamala. Geetavali. And another famous one. Just one more if you can say. Kalyan Kalpataru. So he had many collections of songs that he gave out as well. He also wrote many books of an informative nature on history and the study of religion and so on. He wrote an epoch-making book on the mutts of Orissa, on the temples and mutts of Orissa. He also wrote a book on the Jagannath temple of Puri. So he had such books as well that he wrote. He also translated many of the works of the acharyas. He wrote many of the books in Bengali, some in Sanskrit, some in English. The very first book that he wrote was a Puriyad when he was only a high school student or just about entering university. So he was a prolific writer. And through his teachings, he established the clear conclusions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why he's considered the root of the preaching in the modern era of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And it has taken 2 generations after him for it to actually become a worldwide movement. So the seeds were sown by the Thakur, Bhaktivinod Thakur. His son and Shiksha disciple Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he elaborated on that. He also wrote many books and commentaries and established 64 Gaudiya Mutts. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's illustrious disciple Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founded ISKCON. And thus Thakur Bhakti Vinod's teachings have actually spread everywhere. So it's taken 3 generations for this movement to be here. So we have to give credit to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur for that. And of course also the previous acharyas. So I thought today we'll discuss a bit about his life. Sometimes the lives of great acharyas appear to be ordinary, just like the lives of conditioned souls in this world. And we might think that, well, he also went to school and he also had his apparent confusions and as a child and so on and so forth. But these are, of course, pastimes. We can't consider him to be an ordinary soul. He is an eternal associate of the Lord. And these associates appear to fulfill the Lord's desire to deliver the conditioned souls. They appear for the Lord's purposes. So even though their activities may appear to mimic the activities of conditioned souls, but we should know that souls like Bhaktivinoda Thakur are never under the grip of the illusory energy. They are forever transcendentally situated. So let's talk a bit about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's childhood till he comes up, till the time of Puri, because today is also the Gundicha Marjana festival. We don't have time, of course, to talk about that festival itself, because this is a series in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But I will, at the end of today's talk, try to speak a little bit about his stay in Puri. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in 1838. And his disappearance pastime took place exactly 100 years ago, in 1914, which makes it 76 years of manifest pastimes on this planet. His life, like the life of many other of our great acharyas, was extraordinary. As children, these great acharyas were precocious, prodigies, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born Kedarnath Datta. At the age of 2, he composed his first poem. Now, I don't know how many children of the age of 2 can do that, or even children of the age of 20, or children of the age of 40 can do that. But at 2, he composed his first poem, and gave the indication of the great things to come, of all the poems and songs that he would pen in his later years. And each of the songs that the Thakur composed are beauties in themselves. Even though many of his songs were written in the ordinary Bengali language of the day, in order to make it accessible and understandable to the common man, these contain the most intimate and intricate aspects of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and theology and practice. Srila Prabhupada comments about the songs of Srila Narottam Das Thakur that were also in the genre that they are actually more valuable than they're not different from the teachings of the mantras of the Vedas. In fact, what is more pleasing to Krishna are Narottam Das Thakur's songs than, let us say, the mantras of the Vedas. So these songs are the spontaneous outpourings of the ecstatic devotion of these great acharyas like Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They are not songs that are composed by some ordinary mundane people. In India, we do find devotional songs composed for commercial reasons by many talented musicians. But being a talented musician or a talented poet even, is not a sufficient qualification for writing about Krishna or writing devotional songs. That is a different, you have to be in a different league altogether. Unless one is a pure devotee of the Lord, one cannot be empowered to write such poetry and songs. There are 26 principal qualities that have been ascribed to Vaishnavas. Of course, Vaishnavas have many, many more qualities, but these are the 26 primary qualities. And one of them is that he is a kavi or a poet. Why is it that all these great Vaishnavas turn out to be poets? It's because they're empowered by the Supreme Lord to do that. Otherwise, it's not possible. Just a brief passing reference to Dhruva Maharaj here. When Dhruva Maharaj, as a 5-year-old boy, was blessed with the darshan of the Supreme Lord, he was spellbound, struck with wonder, rendered speechless. And when the Lord touched his conch shell to the head of Dhruva Maharaj, there came forth an ecstatic outpouring of prayer in verse and song. And Srila Prabhupada comments that it is not possible for an ordinary 5-year-old boy to come up with such exquisite poetry and devotional song. It is because he was empowered by the Supreme Lord with spiritual energy that he was able to compose that poetry. So Prabhupada makes a comment that such songs and poems of the great devotees are not within the jurisdiction of the material energy. They stem from the spiritual potency, the internal energies of Krishna. So we can understand the empowerment that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur received right from his very childhood. At the age of 6, his maternal grandfather admitted him to a Sanskrit school of Vidyavachaspati, and he began to learn ordinary knowledge from that very day. And it is at this age of 6 that he already knew, which means he must have started earlier, he already knew the Mahabharata and the Ramayana in detail. He knew every single pastime and every single narration of these two works. Now, these two works are not, you know, little booklets that you can finish in a day. And do you know how many verses the Ramayana has? 24,000. And the Mahabharata? Almost 100,000. So he had read the entire narrations. Maybe not in the original Sanskrit, but he had read the entire narrations and he knew all the pastimes in detail at the age of 6. How old are you? 6. So there you are. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was his age. Do you know the stories of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata? No. So you must follow in the footsteps of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So must we, actually. Even we don't know all the pastimes of the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. And at 6, he was a master in these stories. He could narrate these stories. At the age of 7, his grandfather sent him to Krishnanagar College. Of course, it was a school. It's just called college, but it was a school. And there he had many illustrious schoolmates. One of them later went on to become the king of the Kuch Bihar province. The next year, at the age of 8, he was admitted to an English school, which had just started nearby. So he also learnt English, because that was the British era. He learnt English at a very young age. At the age of 9, he began research into astrology. Astrological texts, he began to pore over them and very quickly tired of it. Not because he couldn't understand it, but because he understood everything so well and realized this is not it. So after 1 year, he tired of astrology and he said he wanted something higher. So then at the age of 10, after having studied astrology very deeply for a year, he decided to move on to spiritual books. So he went into spiritual texts and tried to understand what spirituality was all about. Now, we shouldn't think that because he was exploring spiritual truths, apparently, that, you know, he was an ordinary child, even if a precocious child. As I said, these great acharyas sometimes mimic the ways of ordinary people. But still, through their brilliance and, you know, they make us understand that they are really special. So then, at this age, he also realized that human nature was something very interesting. And he began to study human nature very keenly. He would observe how people thought and how people behaved and how people spoke and why people acted and thought in the way they did. And he was trying to figure out the world and try to understand human nature. It's the most complex thing in life, you know. You can never really figure it out. Why we do things the way we do, why people act in the way they act. It's a very difficult subject. And at the tender age of 10, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was trying to figure it out. He was trying to study human nature very, very deeply. And he would think for a long time about how people acted and so on and so forth. He also mentions in his autobiography about certain childhood pastimes that must have happened maybe before the age of 10. He speaks of one instance where as a child, he went with other people to the ashram of a brahmachari, but he was not a Vaishnava brahmachari. He was just an ordinary brahmachari. He was a tantric. You know what a tantric is? A tantric is one who deals in black magic and so on, you know. You have lots of that variety in India. Even till today in the villages you'll find them. And many of them they deal with, it's in the mode of ignorance. These tantrics, although there are tantra scriptures like the Pancharatra, they are tantras, but they are sattvic tantras. But when we talk of tantrics, they actually deal with the tamasic black magic, you know. So that's very ghastly actually, and ghostly as well. So some of them, they operate with skulls and they do all sorts of, you know, things with that. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur went there, young Kedarnath, you know, he was trying to inquire, what is this, you know, what is this man doing with the skulls? And he had heard from others in hushed tones that if you feed this skull water and milk, then the skull actually smiles. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur resolved that he would try it out. So he went up, you know, it takes up some courage for a boy to go up to a skull and then, you know, deal with it. So he went up and put some milk and water into the skull's mouth, and he makes a wry observation that he didn't see the skull smiling. So anyway, he was learning many lessons. And then there was this carpenter he used to get friendly with. There was a big Durga Puja celebration going on. You know, Bengal is famous for Durga Puja. They worship Durga Devi. There are many Shaktas there. Shakta means the worshippers of Shakti. Shakti means Durga or Kali, the energy of the Lord. So this carpenter was busy with making some backdrops for some celebrations on the stage and so on. So he started chatting, what is the Durga? What is the deity you're doing? Do we believe that she's God? So he started saying, yes, the Brahmanas say that actually when you invite them, then the God comes in this form of this Durga. And then young Kedarnath persisted day after day, and finally he made the carpenter confess. He said, actually, you know, I don't believe these Brahmanas. I don't believe that all these idols are God. Actually, I believe there's only one God. And all these others are just imitations. That's not the truth. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I was very happy to hear that this man believes there is one Supreme Lord and he's not worried about these demigods and all these other goddesses that the ordinary people used to worship. At that time there was also a Muslim footman that they had, and he would go and sit with him and talk with him and have lots of discussions with him. And he would sit and chat about things. And he would ask him about his God. So the Muslim would talk about Khuda. Khuda is, you know, Allah. And how Allah was God, and how Allah created the universe, you know, with like a pancake, and then, you know. So he elaborated on that, and young Kedarnath was fascinated. And he said, you know, but I chant the name of Ram. So is Ram, who is Ram then? So this Muslim was a wise man, although he was just an ordinary servant there. He said, you know, Ram and Allah are the same. There's only one God. So then Bhaktivinod Thakur says, I was very happy to hear that. And with renewed vigor, I continued chanting the names of Ram. So even as a young boy, he was constantly chanting the names of Ram. So these pastimes, of course, went on. And eventually, they moved to Calcutta after the passing away of his maternal grandfather. He continued with his education. And at that time, there was a very famous intellectual of Calcutta. You know, in those days, Calcutta was the capital city of India, because the British settled there and they developed that. And many of the local Bengalis there, they accepted the English way of living, and they became very doubtful about the Vedic culture, and many of them became very prominent. There was a person called Raja Ram Mohan Roy, who some years before Bhaktivinod Thakur had formed this organization called the Brahmo Samaj. And they tried to remove the ills of the Hindu society, and he tried to make some kind of a syncretic religion, kind of a khichdi, you know what a khichdi is, some kind of a mixture of this and that, and, you know, he tried to reconcile everything, and so there were intellectuals of that sort. And they would gather together in Calcutta and have lots of debates and discussions. Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar, Raja Ram Mohan Roy, you know, there were many, many famous intellectuals of this sort. So one of them was Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar. And most of these people were not Vaishnavas. And a name like Bhaktivinod Thakur is a very rare name there in such a circle of intellectuals who were actually Vaishnavas. His son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, also participated in the intellectual debates in those days. Anyway, so Bhaktivinod Thakur, as young Kedarnath, became a student of Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar. And because he was such a brilliant child, he very quickly became a favorite of Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar. Unfortunately, Ishwar Chandra was not a devotee of the Lord. He was one of those mental speculators. And one day he declared to Kedarnath, because no one has seen God, which there's no need for us to talk about God and say that he has such and such form, or he looks like this or looks like that. So because we haven't seen him, nobody has seen him, so we shouldn't talk about him. So Kedarnath, although a young boy at that time, couldn't keep quiet. So he spoke up and he said, but Pandit Mahashray, Pandit means a scholar, you know, and Mahashray is a term of respect, like sir. So, but Pandit Mahashray, you've written a book, and he mentioned the title of a book that Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar had written for children, for school children. And he said, but Pandit Mahashray, in your book, such and such book, you've written there that God is actually formless, and that he is pure consciousness. He doesn't have a form. So if you say no one has seen God and you haven't seen God, then why have you written about God in your book? And why have you given this conclusion that he's only pure consciousness and he doesn't have a form? Is God not fully potent? Is he not omnipotent? And if he is omnipotent, then doesn't he have the power to hold a form? So how can you say that God cannot have a form? A beautiful argument for a young boy to give. It's good for us also to know this argument. For people who say that God cannot have form, so when they say that, in other words, they're actually denying the omnipotence of God. Because if God is omnipotent, then he should be able to hold a form. He should be able to have a form and also be formless at the same time. There's nothing that he can't do. So young Kedarnath gave this argument and said, actually God has a form. And he is our eternal master. And we are his eternal servants. And it is our duty to serve him and to love him. He doesn't mention much about what was Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar's response to that. But anyway, Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar must have been impressed that this young boy could speak like this. So time went on, and in 1856, when Kedarnath, young Kedarnath must have been 17 or 18 years of age, the University of Calcutta was founded by the British. And naturally, many of the prominent intellectuals, they came on the board of the university and they became professors there and so on. And many brilliant students joined Calcutta University to study. And Kedarnath was one amongst them. There were many notable students who joined along with him, big names in the society in the later years to come. And this was the time when Kedarnath began to seriously study religions. He studied the Brahmo Samaj teachings, he studied Christianity, he studied the Bible, he studied the Quran. He also started delving deeper into the Vedic scriptures. And he started comparative analysis of these different things. He actually preferred Christianity to the Brahmo Samaj because he felt that in Christianity, at least they believed in a personal God. Of course, I don't know how many of the Christian denominations today have that clear conviction that God is a person. I'm not an authority on Christianity by any means, but as far as I know, there is only a couple of denominations, or maybe just one or two, that would actually boldly and clearly declare that God is a person. Otherwise, they have vague ideas about God, whether God is a person or not. So in any case, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, after studying the Bible, could understand that this was a personal religion. And he appreciated that vis-a-vis the Brahmo Samaj, where the theological conclusions were kind of vague and abstract. So having studied this as time went on, in the year 1858, 2 years later, his grandfather, who was an astrologer as well, made a prediction, a very astonishing prediction that was made just before he breathed his last. As he was about to depart from this world, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's grandfather predicted, Kedarnath will become a great Vaishnava. He made that prediction and left this world. Amazing, isn't it? So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, moved on. He, on Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar's recommendation, he took on a teaching assignment and went to Cuttack to teach. And it was there at a very young age that he wrote his first book. His first work was a Puriyad, even when he was at the university. But later then he wrote this book on the mutts or the temples of Orissa, which later on became a reference book for many of the historians later. And then as time went on, at the age of 30 in 1868, he became a deputy magistrate in one of the districts around there. And that's when he wrote this book that we mentioned earlier, Bhagavat, his philosophy, ethics and theology. And this is when he was searching for the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because he wanted to know the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu more deeply, and also he wanted to delve into the Srimad Bhagavatam. And at one place he laments that to his utter shock, even after going to many, many places, he could not find a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Finally, with great difficulty, he managed to locate one copy somewhere. And then with great joy, he took that copy and he read it cover to cover and would constantly keep it with him. And that became the source of his spiritual nourishment. Day and night he was thinking about the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So his devotional writings actually began at this time with that the book on the Bhagavat. In 1869, the next year, he was sent to Jagannath Puri. He was posted there as the director or the administrator of the temple of Lord Jagannath. And that was a very, very important service for him. For 5 years he remained there. And this was the time he developed intense appreciation for Lord Jagannath and became very, very attached to him. He used to relish all the festivals there. He writes in his autobiographies and his various other works that he would just love it in Puri because there were so many festivals and many, many pilgrims would come from different parts. And the devotional atmosphere was something that he would just love. He didn't want to leave. To the Thakur's credit goes the utter revamping and rationalization, so to speak, of the procedures that happened in the temple. Even though the traditions were there, you can never tamper with the traditions in the Jagannath temple. They are very, very, they would vociferously object if you tried to tamper with even a little thing there. Efforts, for example, to get Western devotees to come in met with very stiff resistance from the traditional pandas over there, the priests. So these are traditions that even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't tamper with. So we see that even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived in Jagannath Puri for so many years, Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami and Haridas Thakur never entered the temple. Sanatan and Rupa, because they were employed for many years with Muslims and they had Muslim names prior to their surrendering to Mahaprabhu, before they became Sanatan and Rupa. So therefore, because of that excessive contact with the Muslims, they would not have been allowed in the temple and they didn't feel themselves qualified to do that. They, out of their intense humility, they felt that they were not qualified. That's how advanced as Vaishnavas they were. Haridas Thakur, of course, was born in a Muslim family. So he also voluntarily stayed away from the temple. He would only have darshan of the chakra on top of the temple. It is said that when you look at the chakra, then it's as good as seeing Lord Jagannath. It's not different. And interestingly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never protested. There is no record in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Mahaprabhu ever tried to persuade the king or the priests or anybody that, you know, this is not right. Of course it wasn't right. But he never went about saying it because perhaps he thought there would be too much of an uproar and he had a mission. His mission was to establish Krishna consciousness in a certain way and he didn't want that interrupted by other things. So therefore at that time Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also was very cautious that he wouldn't tread on too many toes, but at the same time he streamlined procedures in such an efficient way. The prasadam hall, the cooking and everything else was just wonderfully established. He was an excellent manager, an excellent administrator, very efficient in everything he did. He was a very devoted manager too. He is a perfect example of what a manager in our movement should be like. You have to have the combination of management expertise, administrative ability on one hand. That includes a sharp intellect, a keen intellect to understand and grasp situations. One must be a good manager of human beings, a good leader, able to inspire confidence in others. And yet, one must also have very strong devotional qualities. Mundane management doesn't work. But it must be, one must, a devotee manager must have management skills, but must be a devotee, a good devotee. That's very important. So we learn this from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's tenure as the chief administrator at the Jagannath Puri temple. And there, he oversaw all the administration of the different festivals. He specifically mentions the Rath Yatra, the Snan Yatra, and so on. Today is the day of the Gundicha festival, where the one day before the Rath Yatra, tomorrow's Rath Yatra, Mahaprabhu would go with his associates and clean every nook and corner of the Gundicha temple. Personally, with his own hands, Mahaprabhu would clean and then wash the whole temple. So this is a very nice tradition that has been there for a long time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur oversaw all these different festivals, and he participated in them with great devotion and fervor as well. This was the time that there was an imposter, a cheater called Bhishakshena. This is a very famous story. I'm sure everybody has heard about Bhishakshena and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But nevertheless, a discussion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is incomplete without a discussion of Bhishakshena. So it goes to show that even if somebody is a scoundrel or a rascal, but in somehow or the other he is fortunate to have been chastised by a pure devotee, he is also immortalized. Just as even though Hiranyakashipu was an asura or demon of the highest order, but his name has been immortalized. Every day we sing his name, Hiranyakashipu Vakshaha. So many other great kings have come and gone and we've forgotten about them. But Hiranyakashipu we remember. Because of his connection to Prahlad and because he was personally killed by Lord Narasimhadev. So similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the great Acharya, the great devotee of the Lord, chastised Bhishakshena. And therefore Bhishakshena is a subject of repeated discussion again and again. So he was a yogi. He belonged to one of the 13 upper sampradayas, the deviant sects, the Atibari sect. We won't go into the teachings of this particular sect, but suffice it to say that it was erroneous. And this particular person, Bhishakshena, he had some mystic powers, siddhis, because of which he could do many apparently miraculous things. And you know, the ordinary people are innocent and they're very gullible. So they get taken in by these displays of mystic powers. And they actually start becoming followers of that person and they start worshipping him and sometimes they think he's God. And unscrupulous mystics of this sort don't protest. Rather, they actually encourage the other people to call them God. So he would cure diseases. And naturally, you know, because everybody falls sick at some time or the other, so many people are miserable because of sickness, then they want to go and get healed. And he would heal them. And therefore, he developed a large following. And if that was not it, he proclaimed himself to be Mahavishnu. And he made a declaration that now Mahavishnu has appeared in the forest around Bhubaneswar in Nilachal. And he would drive away the British. So he had a political agenda too, and that's why the British got even more alarmed. I don't think the British would have bothered too much if he just proclaimed he was Mahavishnu, because what difference would it make to them? But when he started raising the banner of revolt against the Queen of England, that's when they sat up and took notice. And he would also do other unscrupulous things. Like one day he made a big announcement that I am Mahavishnu and this is the full moon night and I'm going to perform the Rasa Leela. So he beckoned all the young ladies in the villages around to come and join him in the Rasa Leela. And because he was so charismatic and because he had all these mystic powers, the local people were somehow beholden to him and charmed by him. So he performed many unscrupulous acts with these ladies at that time. And then the men came up in arms against him, and they went to the district collector, at that time a gentleman called Ravenshaw. Today in Cuttack there's a famous college called Ravenshaw College, named after him. And Ravenshaw was wondering what to do. And at that time Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the temple administrator in the Jagannath Puri temple. So he called Bhaktivinoda Thakur and said, you know, please look into it and see what we can do. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to meet Bhishakshena, and he tried to make him understand, but Bhishakshena was adamant. He said, look, what is this Jagannath? This Jagannath is just some idol, just some statue of wood. If you want to know God, you have to know me. I am the real divinity. I am Mahavishnu myself. And he went on and on. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood it was futile to discuss anything with this man. So eventually he went away and brought in policemen and had him arrested. When he was arrested, he protested vigorously. And soon after that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family members started falling sick. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also had raging fever and some mysterious illness. And every time he would go to see him in prison, this man, Bhishakshena, would threaten Bhaktivinoda, look, your children, your wife, they've been afflicted with this disease, now it's going to be you. And sure enough, he had some fever and some illness which wouldn't abate. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur wouldn't relent. So not only was he very, sometimes an administrator has to be very bold and very brave also. And as devotees also, we have to be very firm in our convictions. We have to be unbending in certain situations. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was unrelenting. He said, come what may, I'm not going to let this man go because he is corrupting the whole society. He is claiming that he is Krishna, that he is Mahavishnu. This is greater violence than even physical violence. This is an important point, you see. Violence is of different kinds. There's violence to the mind, to the emotions of someone. If you speak harsh words, you're violent to that person because you have hurt that person's feelings. Higher than that is physical violence, when you hurt somebody's body. But the deadliest violence of all is spiritual violence, when you perform activities which destroy the faith, the sublime faith of people in pure Krishna consciousness. Why is that more deadly than violence against the body? Because even if somebody destroys another person's body or kills that person will be, you know, born again. You're destroying one body. But when you destroy a person's faith in Krishna, you're actually ensuring that this person will have many, many bodies in the future. And then many, many bodies will be destroyed, because when you have a material body, it'll also get destroyed. So you have birth and death and birth and death. In other words, you are ensuring that that person will continue and in the cycle of birth and death. That will be perpetuated. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very vigilant in this regard. So then he went to the various, he spanned out into the countryside and met various people to accumulate evidence, because he had to be prosecuted in court. And he was very meticulous in the way he compiled all the evidence, got it all together. And then he had him sent to prison. And actually at that time, there are different differing, you know, narrations about actually what happened. Some people say that his mystic power was in his hair. He had fuzzy big hair going down to his shoulders. Sometimes there would be sparks flying out of his hair. Imagine that, right? Psychedelic yogi. He would be quite a hit today if he came, actually. Because today we see, I see all the hairstyles in London, right? You know, reminds me of Bhishakshena and the likes of him, you know. So, So he had all these sparks flying out, and somebody told Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, you have all the sickness and everything going on. The key to it is you just snip off his hair, because his mystic power is in his hair. So then somehow or the other, he had somebody come up with some big, maybe it was a garden scissor, you chop bushes, you know, lawn trimmer or something. And they went up to him and snipped off his hair. And because of that, he lost all his power. And then he was fasting. And after 21 days of fasting, he died in the prison. And that's one narration. There are several other narrations of this sort. But anyway, the important thing is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur overcame such a big challenge by his sheer devotion and grit and his abilities as a good administrator. And if that were not enough, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to deal with a couple of others also. There was one man who claimed to be Brahma, the creator. There was another man who claimed to be Balaram. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to deal with all these people. Unfortunately, in India, even till today, every street you will find one Bhagavan. You know, it's a very common thing to find. Anybody has any mystic power, he becomes Bhagavan very quickly, you know. So we need many, many more Bhaktivinoda Thakurs and Prabhupadas and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakurs. So it was here in Jagannath Puri that Bhaktivinoda Thakur set about studying the Vaishnava literature very, very deeply. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. But apart from that, he studied the Govinda Bhashya of Baladev Vidyabhushan, which is the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. He studied the six Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, seminal texts for all Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Stupendous work, his magnum opus, Jiva Goswami's. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur thoroughly studied that book as well. He studied the Prameya Ratnavali and other books of Baladev Vidyabhushan. He studied the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami also very, very thoroughly, the Bhakti Ratnakar. And he absorbed himself in this study despite his busy managerial and magisterial duties. And then he also became writing. And it is at this time that he realized it was necessary to start speaking about the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he founded a group there called the Bhagavat Samsad. Because having read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and other books, he decided that given the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he had to have a facility or a forum where people could hear and speak about Srimad Bhagavatam. So he started this Bhagavat Samsad. And he would himself speak on the Bhagavatam many times. And people all over Puri, including the renunciants, the sadhus there, would love to come and hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur speak. And he also appointed one person, Gopinath Pandit, to be his tutor, because he realized that his knowledge of Sanskrit grammar, he was not as good as he would have liked it to be, so he wanted to brush up on that and he wanted to go deeper into these books. So he would also hear from Gopinath Pandit, something like, you know, Mahaprabhu hearing from, let's say, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami the Srimad Bhagavatam or something like that. Mahaprabhu would every day hear from Raghunath Bhatta. Raghunath Bhatta used to recite the Bhagavatam in melodious ways. Every verse he would chant in three different ways. And everybody was completely charmed by his recitation. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur would hear and he would also speak. And there was one particular Babaji there, Raghunath Das Babaji, not of course our Raghunath Das Babaji, Raghunath Das Goswami. And he objected to Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he started persuading others to not attend because he felt that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not a bona fide Vaishnava. Why did he feel like that? Because Bhaktivinod Thakur wasn't wearing the Kanti Mala, the Tulsi neck beads. He didn't also have the Tilak, the Vaishnava Tilak. So Raghunath Das Babaji began his propaganda. And he said, it's not proper that we should listen to him. Eventually he contracted a serious illness. And he went to Jagannath, and Lord Jagannath appeared to him in a dream and said, you have offended my great devotee. So you must go to him and beg forgiveness. Only then will you be cured of your ailment. So he went to Bhaktivinod Thakur and said, look, I had offended you in this way. But then I had this ailment and the Lord appeared to me in my dream and this is what he instructed me. So I've come here. Please forgive me. I was criticizing you for not wearing a Kanti Mala and for not sporting a tilak on your forehead. I misjudged you. So Bhaktivinod Thakur said, you see, I'm waiting for Lord Jagannath to reveal my Diksha Guru to me. And since I haven't found my Guru, therefore I don't think it's proper for me to wear this. Therefore, I'm doing this. So Bhaktivinod Thakur was very humble about the whole thing because he was a great Vaishnava. He didn't bear any grudges. There was no rancor. That is how a Vaishnava is. A Vaishnava doesn't consider that if someone speaks ill about him or her, that the other person has committed a Vaishnava aparad. You know, we can never go to somebody and say, you've done a Vaishnava aparad against me. It's not done like that. That person may have committed a Vaishnava aparad, but that's between him and Krishna. But that if we have been criticized by somebody, we don't go and object to him that you have done Vaishnava aparad. So Bhaktivinod Thakur, he just accepted it in a very humble spirit. And rather, he tried to help him in many ways to get some cure for his mysterious ailment. And very quickly that Babaji was cured. And then he became a great admirer of Bhaktivinod Thakur. And everywhere he went, he would glorify him like anything. So as time went on, he would continue to speak about the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he would go into the Jagannath temple to also discuss these devotional literatures. Now there is a place in the Jagannath temple complex which is called the Mukti Mandap. Mandap is an arena. Mukti means liberation. And to his disappointment, the Thakur found that the scholars who would gather there at the Mukti Mandap were all Mayavadis. And they were impersonalists, and they were speculators. There was nothing devotional that was there in their discussions. So he never liked to go to these discussions, even though he wanted the scriptures to be discussed. He wanted spiritual topics to be discussed inside the temple. So rather, he preferred to go and sit outside the Lakshmi temple, where Mahaprabhu's footprints were enshrined. So he sat there, and very soon people started gathering, and even those impersonalists and speculators started coming and hearing from him. And then they invited him to that place, and then that became known as a Bhakti Mandap after that. Not the Mukti Mandap anymore, so Bhakti Mandap. So by his devotional qualities, by his erudition, he was able to win over all these great scholars and pundits. In 1874, which was the last year of Bhaktivinod Thakur's tenure as the administrator of the Jagannath Temple, a very notable event happened. Bhaktivinod Thakur's house was along the Grand Road, which is the road on which the Rath Yatra moves from Jagannath Temple to Gundicha Temple. And some way down, there was a house which the Thakur had taken on rent. So he was residing there with his family. And it was in 1874 that a son was born to him, who he named as Bimala Prasad. Bimala Prasad is Yogamaya. Bimala Devi is Yogamaya. And it is said that all the prasadam that is the bhoga that is offered to Jagannath, is not actually considered Mahaprasadam till that prasad is then taken to Vimala Devi and then it is distributed as Mahaprasadam. So Jagannath's Mahaprasad becomes Mahaprasad not just after offering him, but also after offering that Mahaprasad to Vimala Devi. So Bhaktivinod Thakur called his son Vimala Prasad, the Prasad of Vimala Devi. And there is of course that famous episode of the Rath stopping during the Rath Yatra in front of Bhaktivinod Thakur's house and Lord refusing to move, and Bhagavati Devi, a good wife of Bhaktivinod Thakur, taking little Vimala Prasad in her arms all the way on the chariot, and then the garland from the deity falling down as an indication of the Lord's mercy and blessings upon Vimala Prasad. So soon after that incident, a couple of months later, then Bhaktivinod Thakur was posted out of Jagannath Puri and he returned to Bengal. He continued his preaching activities over there. And tomorrow we'll speak more about Bhaktivinod Thakur's further preaching activities, his devotional works, and eventually his disappearance. It's exactly 9 o'clock now, so we'll stop here. We have another function going on here today. Thank you very much. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Gaur Premanande.